tonight I'm delighted to have back at the store Yogacharya Richard Peterson, and for the first time at the store, Swami Atmavidyananda. And the last time they were here, it just felt for weeks afterwards like the energy in the store was just, you know, like we were kind of on a wonderful energy field, you know, like it just seemed to fill the store. So I'm just happy to have the blessings of that lineage back here at the store. And tonight they'll be talking about the ancient scientific teaching of Kriya Yoga. Thank you very much for coming to Many Rivers.
Good evening. Please close the eyes. I bow to God. I bow to my Gurudev, Paramahamsa Hariharananda. I bow to my Guruji, Paramahamsa Pragyananda. I bow to the lineage of Kriya Yoga Masters. I bow to all saints and sages of all religions. I bow to Swami Atmavidyananda. I bow to the power of God within us all. Amen. Good evening. Tonight we have the opportunity to share some information about a very beautiful spiritual practice called Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga is an integral yoga that promises the simultaneous development of body, mind, intellect, and soul. What that means is through practicing Kriya Yoga, you'll enjoy better health, better energy. You'll achieve a state of more emotional balance and calmness. Intellectually, your mind will become clearer, more discerning. You'll be able to make better decisions. Your memory will be improved. And spiritually, we will evolve at a dynamic pace. And it's that which I would like to address. First, with a little history, I would like to talk a little bit about who we are and the theoretical foundation of this practice. Who we are is we are a continuation of the mission that was started by Paramahamsa Hariharananda, who came to the West in 1974. We are an international organization with ashrams throughout the world, in America, South America, Europe, India, Australia, and New Zealand. So Hariharananda's mission that began in 74 has now clearly become a worldwide mission, and it's very profound. Kriya Yoga, for me, answers, and for all of us, answers some very deep and very profound questions. And so while this information is theoretical and abstract, it really is somewhat of the essence of the practice. The information that I'll share with you is information that I've learned from Hariharananda directly and also from studying his book called Kriya Yoga, The Scientific Process of Soul Culture and the Essence of All Religion. Hariharananda teaches, essentially, answers the question, who are we? Well, what we're not is a body with a soul. What we are is a soul that has taken a body. And we've taken many bodies. We're on a journey, an evolution. Hariharananda says, God is one, absolute and non-dual. Before creation, God existed as absolute Brahman or impersonal soul. He wished to be manifested into the various forms of existence. So from this absolute existence, he transformed himself into relative existence and manifested the material universe. Therefore, Harihananda teaches, anything that we see, anything that we perceive, anything that we has life or matter is none other than this manifestation of God. He quotes the Katha Upanishad saying that the indwelling self of all beings is this one absolute Brahman who has manifested himself into all these different forms. Therefore, who are we? We each are a spark of this divinity. And as such, we have been on a journey through eons of time to where we are now, and we also have a direction where we are going. Harihananda always would quotes in his book a very famous quote by the great Indian saint and mystic Sri Aurobindo, who says that matter, the physical universe, is the self-expression of the absolute God that has playfully plunged itself into apparent sleep in order to enjoy the delight of self-discovery as it ascends back to itself through the successive stages of evolution. There's a journey from stone to God. Baba said there is no such thing as inanimate matter. Everything in the universe has life. The universe has consciousness. The universe comes from consciousness. And this is God's play. God was one and he wished to be many. So, Baba teaches, in the rocks, in the mineral world, there is life. There is life force. The life forces grow in the mineral world. They get too strong, and they pass into the vegetable world. From the vegetable world, these life forces continue to expand. The divinity, the consciousness, continues to expand and then moves into the animal realm. Baba teaches that there is a, Hindu scriptures talk about a law of called metempsychosis, which is the movement of the soul from one body to another. From the mineral world, then, we, because we have all been on this journey, Harihananda teaches, moved into the vegetable world. And in the vegetable world, they estimate that there were, went, lived through, the soul goes through all these different wombs, 3 million different types of vegetable, of the vegetable world. There are 3 million different types of plants, which, according to this theory, we have experienced all of them. From the vegetable world, then, into the animal world. First the lower animals, and then slowly into the higher animals, going through a total of 8 million different lives that eventually bring us to the human realm. Why is this important to Kriya Yoga? Because this journey continues in the human realm. It's not, the journey is not finished. He says, from the animal realm, when the biology starts to get more complex, the mind starts to evolve. First, it's very simple, and it's just instinctual, with very little memory, and no real power of discernment, of discrimination. As we get up into the higher realms, we move into the human stage. In the human stage, we now have the capacity to reason and to discern. He teaches that human beings, a human birth is a very rare thing because human beings can discriminate. We also have a brain and spinal column that are can actually take us beyond its own existence. So from the instinct we have reason Plus, when we come into the human sphere, then comes the rise of discrimination and self-consciousness, which is ego, which starts a whole bunch of problems for us. Anyway, from that, we then go into what's called, we continue to grow, and we go into what he calls the superhuman, where we start to expand super consciousness. And he says this process of evolution is yoga, is the highest purpose of yoga. While clearly good health, balanced mind, all that is extremely important and completely necessary in order if we're going to go to the higher levels, the whole purpose of yoga is the realization of this innate God consciousness, which is our essential nature. Where do I want to go from here? Baba teaches that the saints, the rishis, found that it would take 1 million years of good health and with no decrepitude in order for a human being to evolve a brain that was capable of expressing cosmic consciousness and absorbing the entire knowledge of the universe. Hard to believe, but this is possible. But they discovered that by magnetizing, a process of magnetization, they could quickly increase this period of evolution. This magnetization of the body is really the essence of the power of this practice of Kriya Yoga. And as a result, we can speed up this evolution to where this God realization can be achieved in one lifetime. This might be hard to believe, but it's true, and it's been proven in the lives of this lineage. Kriya Yoga, as practiced by our lineage, is also very profound in that it is supported and backed by this lineage of realized masters. What a realized master is someone who has attained this superhuman stage, that has actually realized the divinity within, have achieved this superconscious state from superconsciousness. Hariharananda says, you move into cosmic consciousness, from cosmic consciousness, wisdom. This wisdom state is called the attainment of the yogic state called Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Nirvikalpa Samadhi is the highest spiritual attainment that a yogi can achieve. At that point, the yogi has stopped their heart and stopped their mind and has actually totally absorbed back into the absolute, then coming back into the body. Baba says that when this happens, the person experiences a spiritual experience through which new aspects of reality dawn on the person. And at that point, then, where we talk about I am God, you are God, is no more just words. It's actual direct perception. And Hariharananda teaches us that this state is our birthright, and it's the purpose of why we were born, and whether or not we realize it or not, that's what all of us are here. That's the whole purpose of creation, God's play, and taking us back to our original nature, which is Satchidananda, existence, absolute consciousness, and absolute bliss. Kriya Yoga has a very beautiful history. Hariharananda teaches that God brought Kriya Yoga with the creation of the universe. He teaches in the Bhagavad Gita that initially it was given, in according to Hindu mythology, to Vivaswam, the sun god, who gave it to his son Ikshvaku, who gave it to Manu, and through this solar dynasty it was passed down through generations from the rishis to their sons. Over the course of time, it disappeared. Lord Krishna brought it back again, as taught in the Bhagavad Gita. The problem with the Kriya Yoga that was taught then was that it was very austere and very demanding, and it, by its nature, it excluded the common man. Only those who were wealthy enough that didn't have to work could practice it, or those who chose a life of asceticism that could go off into the forest or into a cave. Again, over time, the technique started to disappear. So, it was brought back. In 1861, a modern revival by Babaji Maharaj, who's called the Deathless Saint. Not much is known about him other than he still is alive and living in the Himalayas. But he reintroduced Kriya Yoga again. This time, there were two aspects to it. One, would it have a scientific bent or nature to it? Because of the nature of humanity was moving into the industrial age, and modern man needed a spiritual practice that would speak to him in terms of the modern intellect. He also wanted to make it available to the householder. People like us with families and jobs and a very full life. So in 1861, he chose to bring Kriya Yoga back for the upliftment of mankind by using his disciple, Lahiri Mahasaya. Lahiri Mahasaya had been Babaji's disciple in a previous incarnation. He was a householder. He had a wife and five children, and he worked for the British Works Department for 35 years. In that time, he achieved God realization, this state where he had the direct experience of the divine, which is our essential nature. He taught, had many disciples, and started the spread of Kriya Yoga in the modern age. He had many disciples, two of which are here, Sri Yukteswar and Bhupendranath Sanyal. The guru-disciple relationship is extremely important in Kriya Yoga because it's taught directly from the teacher to the student, backed by this Satguru, realized master. Baba teaches in the Kriya Yoga book that the realized master is, in fact, God in his personal and manifest form. Guru is made up of two syllables, gu, which means invisible or God, and ru, visible. The invisible uses the visible as his instrument for the upliftment of the disciples. Hariharananda teaches that when the disciple desire is deep enough and that he or she is ready, then God will create the opportunity for them to take discipleship with a realized master. So it's very profound. So Lahiri Baba, two of his disciples were Sri Yukteswar and Bhupendranath Sanyal. Sri Yukteswar had been a householder, had been a very successful businessman, but was very spiritual and as a layperson, had actually achieved Nirvikalpa Samadhi. But in his later years, he became a widow, and once his one daughter was nicely established,
he took sannyas. So he lived in both the realms of a lay person and a monastic. Upendranath Sanyal was also a direct disciple of Lahiri Mahasaya. He was a householder. He was a teacher, a professor, and he worked with, I believe started a university or worked in a university with Rabindranath Tagore, who was also a Kriyavan. Sri Yukteswar had many disciples, three of whom are here. Paramahamsa Yogananda, who many of you have no doubt heard about through his mission in the West and his book, Autobiography of a Yogi. Swami Satyananda, and our Gurudev, Paramahamsa Pragyananda. Now, why is it important that we have this lineage and we say that it's our lineage? As I said, these teachings are taught directly from the teacher to the disciple. In this case, Babaji taught Lahiri Baba, who taught Sri Yukteswar. In 1932, at the age of 25, Hariharananda took first Kriya, there are six levels of Kriya, from Sri Yukteswar. Sri Yukteswar was approaching the end of his life, which he knew. In 1936, those of you that read Autobiography of a Yogi know that Yogananda came back to India for a visit. At that time, Sri Yukteswar sent Hariharananda to Calcutta to have an audience with Yogananda. At that time, Hariharananda asked Yogananda if he would show him the nirvikalpa samadhi state. Yogananda said, "If I show you this, what are you prepared to do? How much are you prepared to practice?" Hariharananda said, "It's not a matter of time. I've taken the vow that I will dedicate my life to achieving this state." Yogananda was happy with his answer. He showed him nirvikalpa samadhi. When he came out of nirvikalpa samadhi, he blessed Hariharananda and later gave him second Kriya. So that's why he's part of our lineage. Swami Sri Yukteswar, shortly after, had his Mahasamadhi and left his body. Yoganandaji left India and came back for his mission in the West. And in 1938, finally, Hariharananda decided that it was time for him to leave his job. He was a technocrat in the textile industry. He was a textile engineer, was very successful. And he left that. He came from a very aristocratic, wealthy family. He renounced all that. And in June of 1938, he entered Karar Ashram. He immediately then, or shortly thereafter, went into a period of seclusion and deep meditation, where he went for 11 years into a period of silence and long, long periods of deep, deep meditation, only coming out to work in the garden, where he transformed the ashram and he did a lot of brickwork, because you can't just sit all the time or the body will atrophy. The body has to be strong and healthy in order to accomplish this goal. So, his masters weren't available to him. His practice was growing rapidly. He then took third Kriya from Swami Satyananda, who had taken over the organization in India after Yogananda had left. Then, he was away out of Puri, so Baba Hariharananda took fourth, fifth, and sixth Kriya from Upendranath Sanyal. So that's the reason for our lineage being what it is when we say that it's our lineage. All of these is the direct link to Hariharananda. Hariharananda had his Mahasamadhi in December of 2002, December 3rd. But he left for us his successor, Paramahamsa Pragyananda, who is the spiritual head of our mission, and who, once again, is a realized master, who is a treasure beyond words for any of you that have met him or had the pleasure of being in his company. He's the author of many books, travels the world constantly, selflessly spreading the work of Kriya Yoga for the upliftment of mankind. So the essence of Kriya Yoga, then, is that we are not a body with a soul. We are a soul that has taken a body. And it is our purpose in life to realize, actually realize and directly experience this inner divinity. And Kriya Yoga is a path, a process, a technique, a philosophy, through which this can be attained, because it has been attained through the lives of these masters. So, that's who we are, that's where we are, and that's how we're going to get there. I would now like to introduce you to Swami Atmavijñānanda, who will expand on this topic clearly. Swami Atmavijñānanda is another part of this beautiful tradition of teachers. Through great personal sacrifice and as a service to mankind and his master, has left India to come to the West to teach. He was initiated by Hariharananda in 1994. It was always his wish from childhood to live the life of a monastic. He excelled in school. By the time he was in his early 20s, he had achieved a master's degree in mechanical engineering. He worked in that field as a mechanical engineer for several years before changing and moving into marketing, where he was very successful in that. And in 2002, through the grace of Paramahamsa Pragyananda, he joined the ashram, in Baligai, which is just outside Karar Ashram, and became Brahmachari Vidyananda. In 2006, we were blessed to have him come to America and begin his mission in the West. In this February, his long-standing dream of becoming a monastic, of becoming a sannyas, a monk, was realized, and on the night of Shivaratri, Paramahamsa Pragyananda gave him sannyas, and he became Swami Atmavijñānanda. So we're very fortunate to have him with us. Those of us that have got to spend time with us have been very moved by his depth of spirituality, of knowledge, and of his great sense of humor. So with that, I would say thank you and ask Swami Atmavijñānanda to please speak.
Savīryam karavāvahai tejasvi navadhitamastu mā vidviṣāvahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. O God, please protect us together. Let us take food together. Let us pray and meditate together. Let us shine in wisdom. Let there be no jealousy among us. Om Amen. With deepest love, I bow to one formless God, present in everything and everywhere. I bow to lineage of Kriya Yoga masters and all the saints and sages of all religions. I bow to my master Paramahansa Hariharananji and Paramahansa Prajnanandaji. I bow to Richard Baba and perceiving divinity within you all, I bow to you. Good evening. In Taittiri Upanishad, there is a mantra in 3rd canto, 8th chapter. Anando Brahma iti Vyajanat. Anandathi khalvimani sarvani bhutani jayante. Anandena jatani jivanti. Anandam prati abhisamvishanti iti. The translation is, all the beings are originated from the bliss. We live in bliss and at the end we merge back into that supreme bliss. As Richard Baba was explaining about the nature of the soul, the nature of the God as Satchit Ananda. So this Ananda, supreme bliss or extreme happiness, if you look around your own self, you'll find that everybody is in some pursuit, working for something. If I ask you, what do? You'll say that I'm working in some office or in some company. Why do you work? You'll say that I'll get some money. If you get some money, what will you do? You'll say, maybe I can buy a car, a house. If you have a car, a house, what will you do? Maybe I'll search for a good partner. So ultimately, if you go on questioning and answer, you reach a point where you say that I'm doing it to get some happiness. So if you see, everybody is working in some pursuit. Different people have different pursuits. But in each pursuit, there is one common factor, and that is to derive some happiness, to get some joy, some bliss. And this common goal we all have. Now the question is, are we really successful in our efforts, or still we are unhappy? We do everything, but is it going to fulfill all our wishes? Many people don't recognize and they still continue to suffer, struggling throughout the life, but not able to find this happiness. Where is this happiness? A very simple assumption we can say, whatever we do, you will say that I want happiness. If you see little more into this own nature of I want happiness, you will find that not only you want happiness, but you want the happiness which is pure happiness, which is unmixed with any kind of sorrow. If you go furthermore, you will find that you want happiness which is not mixed with any sorrow or suffering, but also you want happiness which is long-lasting. If somebody tells you, do this thing, you will be happy today, but tomorrow there is no guarantee, you will not accept that offer, because it is human nature. You want happiness which is long-lasting. You want to be happy today, tomorrow, day after tomorrow, and all the time. One step further, you want happiness which is long-lasting, but also the happiness which is eternal. You want the happiness which is permanent, to the point where you can go no more further. Permanent happiness, eternal happiness, and that is what is bliss. But where is this bliss? Where is this permanent happiness? There was a man. One fine morning, he was reading newspaper. And somebody was ringing the bell. So he opened the door and he found that his best friend is on the door. So he hugged him and welcomed him. Then they started talking with a cup of tea, taking some sip, started talking many things. Half an hour, this conversation went on various topics. After that, my friend, he left. Now the man wanted to read the newspaper again, and he was now searching for his glasses. So he was searching the glasses, he thought that it is on the table, but it was not there. He thought maybe I put it on the floor, it was not there. He searched the drawers, and everywhere he was searching, but he could not find the glasses. Then he lost his temper, and he started shouting, "Where are my glasses?" And listening to his voice, the wife came out who was working in the kitchen, and she told, "What happened? I am not able to find my glasses, and where did you keep my glasses?" And his voice raised. Then the children, they came out of their study room, and they found that the daddy is completely angry and he is lost. Then everybody was looking at this man, but the children, they could not help to stop their laughing. And ultimately the youngest child, he told, "Daddy, you are searching for the glasses, but you see, glasses are on your forehead." And man looked at his glasses were on his forehead. And this is what is our situation. We want to search for something. We are in search of permanent happiness. But where are we searching? We are searching it outside, thinking it is here, there, and so on. We think that the happiness of permanent, eternal bliss, supreme bliss, lies in various objects, maybe in money. So ask the people who have become billionaire, are they really happy throughout their life? Answer you know much better. We think that maybe some relationship will give us ultimate happiness. It happens. Nowadays we think that if you ask a person, a young man, "Are you happy?" He said, "No, I'm not happy." "Why?" "Because I'm alone. So I think if I will find a perfect match, maybe on match.com. So I will be more happy." Or we can say, "If I will find a better half." I don't know. In India we call it better half. It becomes better or not, that's a different story. We call it better half. So we find a better match, and still 2 months, 3 months, sometimes 2 years, 3 years, we are very happy, no doubt. After that, this happiness disappears. Sometimes the situation becomes so worse that the person becomes a burden on us. What happens? We think that maybe some delicious food will make us happy. We go to different restaurants, today here, tomorrow in McDonald's and some other places. But same taste, same food, once, twice, thrice, it doesn't give happiness. In the beginning, yes. Then again we are getting bored. So everything we try, in the external world, in materialistic world, in objects, we are trying to find this happiness. But where is this? Remember, you are the source of happiness. The moment you turn your attention within, you will find that you are the source of happiness. You project this happiness onto others, onto the people, onto the objects, and they become happy, you become happy. But it is you. It is within you. Let us analyze this word little bit more. I want happiness, this assumption. If you see, there are three words. I want happiness. Suppose if you move want and I, what remains? Only happiness. Now we'll make some analysis about these two words first. How to remove? What is want? First, let us remove the want. What is want? Want means some desire, some cravings. And every moment we are wishing, we are desiring something. Lord Buddha told, desires are the cause of misery. So, what to do with this desire? If you fulfill one desire, another desire comes up. You eventually, you can fulfill all your desires. You can have money, you can have relationship, you can have good partner, good house, a car, home computer, everything you can go on adding in the list. You can have everything, but you find that even after achieving all these things, the desires, they pop up. There is no end to desire. What to do then? And just we are becoming a puppet in the hands of desire. The mind tells, do this, mind tells, I want this, I want this, I want this, all the moment. And you become a puppet. Just like dancing on the tunes of your mind, from wandering from pillar to post, but there is no end to desire. But remember, there comes a time in everybody's life when we ask, what next? What next? And at that moment, you will find that the whole perception changes, desire changes the course of action, and you have only one desire, that is the highest desire. I want the ultimate happiness and I want to realize God. Before that, you go on fulfilling, spend your time, it's all exercise. The moment you turn your attention within, and with that higher purpose, with that desire, when you start working on your life, you achieve everything. Desires, they lead us from one place to other place. You can just think. You try many things. Even when you pray and meditate, you go to church, to temple, to synagogue, you want to transfer your life, but still there is something which is lacking. Something is missing. And it is all, when we are searching outside, it will remain. However, the second word is I. What is this I? I means, you can say, the sense of individuality or ego. But what is this real I? We always identify ourselves with this body. We are so absorbed with this idea of body consciousness that we cannot get rid of this simple identification. How do we do? Because somebody asks you who you are. You'll say that my name is so and so. I am a man or woman. I am young or old. I am Christian or a Hindu. I am American, I am Indian. So you always identify yourself with some title, which is called, in Vedanta it is called Upadhi. We identify. But we never identify ourselves with our own source of happiness or with God. This idea you can imagine now. Suppose your car is broken on the way. So you take your car to the garage. And if your friend asks, what happened? You will tell that my car is broken, I am taking my car to garage. But if you become sick and the same friend asks you, where are you going? You say that I am going to doctor. You don't say that I am taking my body to the doctor. Because you are so identified with the body that you cannot think it is a separate thing. You are, I am the body that is embedded in our mind. What is this I? What is this ego? The real I is within. When we remove all these upadhi, the titles, the essence which remains is the real I. Another meaning of I is ego. Ego is the greatest enemy, which is the greatest obstacle in our spiritual life. One of our monks, he gave the definition of ego. What is ego? He said ego means E-G-O, there are three let us. So eternally God is omnipresent. Then everything goes okay. So if we think this is the ego, eternally God is omnipresent, then everything goes okay. Yes, it is true. Because if we can perceive God, God is here, God is here, God is in you, God is in her, then there is the question of individuality. God is within me, God is within you. So there is individuality. There is no ego. It's all God. And that is what is truth. So, I will give an example of ego. You can compare ego with the banana tree. Have you seen banana tree? If you cut the trunk, within few days the new leaves will come up. That is what is ego. You crush it, and it again comes up. You crush it, again it comes up. However, so if we can remove these two things, I means identification with this body, and identification with our true nature, and if we can remove the wants, means if we can reduce our wants, if we can learn how to live happily within less things, then we can make our life much more worthwhile and happy, and we can search the real happiness within us. So, but what is the way? How can we really identify ourselves with God? God, remember, God is within us, God is with us. Only thing that we have to recognize this fact. And if you remember, in the Holy Bible, it is written 1:26 in Genesis, God made man and woman in his own image. It's a very simple sentence. Many times we have read, but we have never contemplated. God made man and woman in his own image, then who we are? Richard Bauer gave the introduction who we are, but I am asking you who we are. If you ask yourself, we are in the image of God. That means we are cast in the mold of God. Remember, image cannot be different from the object. So if we are in the image of God, that means we are God. We are God, but unfortunately, out of ignorance, we have forgotten this fact. And we have to identify ourselves with our own divinity. My master used to tell, you are God in human being and human being in God. They are not different. And if you refer the Isha Upanishad, the very first mantra of Isha Upanishad, it explains a very beautiful phenomena. And this Upanishad dates back around 9,000, more than 9,000 years ago. It was revealed. You can see the concept thousands of years ago, the saints and sages, they taught us. The mantra is, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha Ma Gradha Kasya Svidhanam. The translation is, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam. Whatever is existing in this universe, Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat, whether it is animate or inanimate, whether it is moving or non-moving, everything is manifestation of God. That means, Gurudev used to say, there is nothing which is non-God. If you look at the matter, it is God. If you look at the stone, there is presence of God. In the chair, presence of God. In the human being, animal, wherever you see, there is presence of God. Only thing, it is a degree of manifestation. But there is presence of God. And the second line of this mantra tells, Tena Tyaktena Bhunjitha, means leaving behind the idea of body consciousness, you should enjoy this world. Bhunjitha means to enjoy. Enjoy this world. The saints and sages, they don't say that you leave the world, renounce the world and come to God. No, they say that this world is given to you. It is a gift of God. Enjoy this world, but with an idea of renunciation, that it does not belong to me. It is given to me for best of use. Let me make best use of it and attain divinity. To perceive divinity everywhere and remain in that divinity. Ma gradha kasya sviddhanam means never covet for the wealth of others, for it is not your wealth. Everything belongs to God, nothing belongs to us. So why there is question of ego if nothing belongs to us? What does belong to us? Nothing. Even this body does not belong to us. One day this body will leave us. The final destination of this body is either in the burial ground or in cremation ground. This mind is not ours. What is ours? Then for what we are egotistic? And God is never egotistic. If we have realized that we are God, there is no question of individuality. There is only love, only happiness, all the time blissful. Anyway, so here, how can we reach to that source of happiness? How can we make our life worthwhile, more meaningful? The answer is Kriya Yoga, the most ancient and scientific technique of meditation. I'm using these two words, most ancient and scientific technique of meditation, for a reason. If you look into the scriptures, you'll find, if you go back 10,000 years ago even, the oldest scriptures available in human society are called Vedas. In Rigved Bhashya, you can find the definition of Kriya Yoga. If you read the scriptures like Yoga Vasistha and Adhyatma Ramayana, they are around 8,000 years ago. In these two scriptures, there is description of Kriya Yoga. Lord Rama is teaching Kriya Yoga to his brother Lakshman, and there are some verses, I think it is 11 verses total, which explain about Kriya Yoga. In Mundak Upanishad, 9,000 years ago, there are two verse mantras which explain Kriya Yoga. In the Bhagavatam, 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna is teaching Kriya Yoga to his disciple Uddhava, and in Bhagavad Gita, to Arjuna he is teaching Kriya Yoga. It is in 5th, 6th and 4th chapter, there are some verses. The most popular text on yoga, you might have heard the name, Yoga Sutra of Patanjali. Aphorisms on Yoga by Sage Patanjali. In that book also, from beginning to end, if you go on reading, you will find word yoga comes many times, but in the second chapter, first verse, Sage Patanjali has explained the definition of Kriya Yoga. Tapah Swadhyaya Ishwar Pranidhanani Kriya Yoga. He says that tapah means discipline of body and mind. Tapah means austerity. Tapah means also temperature. And Swadhyaya means self-analysis or self-study or study of scripture. But here, self-analysis means, who am I? What is my identity? What is my relationship with God? What is my relationship with this world? All this self-enquiry is called self-analysis, Swadhyaya. And Ishwar Pranidhana means unconditional love for God or complete surrender to God. So Kriya Yoga is the integration of discipline, self-analysis and unconditional love for God. And these three words represent three paths. Tapa means the path of action, Karma Yoga. Swadhyaya is the path of knowledge, Jnana Yoga. And Ishwar Pranidhan, unconditional love for God, is the Bhakti Yoga, path of devotion. So, in this book even, Sage Patanjali has mentioned Kriya Yoga. And I can give you at least 15 scriptural descriptions where you can find Kriya Yoga, but in none of these books there is any other yoga mentioned. No other yoga is mentioned. Even the most popular Hatha Yoga, which we know nowadays, it came into existence in the formal traditional form 3000 years ago with Guru Gorakhnath tradition. So these things, they prove that this is the most ancient scientific technique of meditation or yoga. Because if there would have been any, we must have got any reference, at least in one of these books. A other thing is scientific. This Kriya Yoga is completely scientific. Why scientific? If you perform some experiment in the laboratory and the result comes again and again, the same result, then you tell that this is a scientific fact. We are living in a scientific age. So suppose you add 2 plus 2, so result will be 4. I don't know if somebody can make it 5. But result will be 4. Whether you add it here or in India or in Japan or any part of the world, it will remain same. Similarly, anybody practicing Kriya Yoga in any part of the world, regardless of age, regardless of caste, regardless of any conditioning, will get the same result. That is why it is scientific. The simple definition of Kriya Yoga. There are two words, Kriya and Yoga. Yoga, you all know. The simplest meaning or common meaning of yoga is union. And it has come from Sanskrit root word yuj, means to unite. Union of what? Union of body and soul? Union of our individual consciousness with cosmic consciousness? Or scientifically you can say, union of microcosm with macrocosm. Although in Sanskrit language, there are 32 meanings of word yoga. Of course, I am not going to discuss all, but one meaning of yoga is discipline. One meaning of yoga is meditation. Yoga means samadhi. In Amar Kosh, there is definition, yoga samadho. And yoga means realization, a state where individual ego is completely vanished. If you read Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has given some definitions of yoga. In the second chapter, 50th verse, Lord Krishna has told, Siddhya Siddhyo Samabhutva Samattvam Yoga Uchyate. Regardless of failure and success, remaining in equanimity, remaining in balanced state is called yoga. In the same chapter, second chapter, 48th verse, he tells another definition, Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam. Yoga is the skill in performing action. We do action, but skillfully when we perform action, the meaning is that any action when we perform in God consciousness, that becomes yoga. However, so yoga has 32 meanings, but Kriya, if you split this word in Sanskrit, Kri and Ya, there are two syllables. Kri means action, and this word has come from Sanskrit root word kru, means to do or action. And Ya means that or divinity. So to perceive divinity in each and every action of our daily life is Kriya. Any activity which reminds us of the presence of God within is Kriya. So Kriya teaches to perceive God, to perceive divinity everywhere in everything. The mantra from Ishopanishad I discussed, it is the same mantra. Same concept to perceive divinity everywhere. And that is the truth of life. So Kriya, when we practice Kriya, it is a scientific technique. And remember, Kriya is not any religion. It's not a religion. It is non-sectarian. Anybody can learn and practice Kriya Yoga. My Gurudev used to say, Baba Hariharananji, that if you are a Christian and if you practice Kriya, you become better Christian. If you are a Hindu and practice Kriya, you become better Hindu. It has nothing to do with your belief. It is just a scientific technique of meditation. So, Kriya gives you benefits. What benefits? It simultaneously develops your body, mind and soul together. One who practices Kriya Yoga gets benefit of mental, physical, intellectual and spiritual simultaneously. So it is a composite yoga which can give you all-round development. In Kriya, there are not many exercises. It is very simple yoga, and in Kriya there are some breathing exercise, very simple posture and perception of triple divine qualities, divine sound, divine light, divine pulsation, which you can start perceiving right from the day of initiation. And Kriya is very simple. It is the surest, easiest and quickest path of God realization. In many types of yoga, we get benefits. Something can give better memory, better health. Something can give much happiness. But Kriya gives you everything plus a guarantee for God realization in one lifetime. If you practice, you can get it. Kriya Yoga is based more on the breath and concentration. If you see here in this diagram, in the human body, there are 7 prominent chakras in the spine and brain. These 5 chakras located in the spine at the bottom where spinal cord is ending, this is called bottom center or money center. Second center behind the genital organ, it is called family center. Behind the navel center or digestive center. In the heart, this is heart center, center of emotions. Throat center, center of religion, good and noble thoughts. These 5 centers, they keep us busy in this materialistic world of objects. Then in between the eyebrows, 3 inches inside, soul center, and top of the head, fontanel. These 2 are spiritual centers. Any activity we do in our life is governed or controlled by these 5 lower chakras or centers. Every day we earn money, financial activities, we have some job, we have some relationship, family activities, we take food, sometimes we become emotional, sometimes we want to pray and meditate. So all these activities, they are governed by these lower 5 centers. And in the human body, there are 3 important H. One is our head, second is hands, and third is our heart. And these three are related to all these 3 path, jnana, karma and bhakti. Head is related with path of knowledge. Hands are the symbol of action, this is path of action. And heart, devotion, path of devotion. Kriya Yoga brings integration and coordination between these 3 H. Suppose, if your head is telling something, but heart is telling something else, can you feel happiness? Because there is always some friction. If your hands want to do something, but your heart doesn't agree, again some friction. So Kriya Yoga brings integration and coordination, balance and harmony between these 3 H. These techniques are so beautiful that very gradually they transform our whole life. In some of the exercise, means one of the scientific technique of Kriya Yoga, I'll tell you some benefits, how we derive it. Remember, in the human body, there are 2 vital organs. One is our brain, other is our spine. If you want to live healthy life, take care of your spine. Make it more flexible. Because brain sends signals, or brain is functioning, sending the signals through the spine. And the whole nervous system works with that. If the spine is problematic, sometimes you have slip disc or spondylitis, you can imagine how painful life becomes. And when we inhale, every moment we are inhaling and exhaling, breath is going on, and breath is direct perceivable God as per the Upanishads. So here, when we inhale, so with each inhalation, 20% oxygen intake, it directly goes to the brain, and 80% is supplied to the different cells of the body. You can say that brain consumes more oxygen, it is a capitalist. Now, in one of the technique of Kriya Yoga, there is more supply of blood to the midbrain, right and left cerebrum, and as a result, there is more supply of oxygen. So oxygen is the nutrition of brain. As a result, you get better memory, and that too retentive memory. Whatever you read, you can remember it. And everybody needs a good memory. Do you need good memory? I also need good memory. I'll tell you humor. There were 2 friends. One of the friend is Santa Singh. So his friend Santa Singh was working in the office. His office was on 25th floor, and his friend Banta Singh came to his office, and all of a sudden he told Santa Singh, "Do you know your daughter has died in an accident?" It was a shocking news. Santa Singh was really upset. What to do? What happened? And he was so depressed, immediately he jumped from 25th floor. What to do? When he jumped and he reached 20th floor, then he remembered that he has no daughter. When he reached 15th floor, he remembered that he is not even married. And when he reached the second floor, just before hitting the ground, he remembered that his name is also not Santa Singh. This is what is our memory. What we should remember, we are not able to remember. And what we should forget, we remember that. So our retentive memory should be sharp, and with Kriya Yoga, it becomes so sharp that you can take right decision at right time. That is what is the definition of intellectual person. In another technique of this scientific Kriya Yoga, there is pressure on the liver. So as a result, the liver secretes more bile, which mixes with the digestive juices and gives you better digestion. There is pressure on the pancreas. So this insulin, flow of insulin is regulated, and diabetes has come down to a great extent. It is the feedback of many, many disciples. There is pressure on the sigmoid colon, transverse colon, ascending and descending colon. It gives you better evacuation. Whatever toxins are accumulated, they are just thrown away very easily from the body. So Kriya Yoga, and also there is pressure on the lower abdomen. The diseases like hernia and appendicitis will never bother you if you practice Kriya Yoga. So it gives you better health, it gives you better memory, and also you balance both the lobes of your brain, so you get better harmony, better understanding who you are, you get better understanding of this world, so you get more better interpersonal skill and harmony in your relationship. As a result, you have good family relationship, good society. And ultimately, it gives you guarantee for God realization. If you practice, you will get it. How? It is completely scientific. Once you learn, you can understand and follow it. My master, Baba Hariharananji, used to say that Kriya Yoga is cash payment. It is not check payment. And he was true. Because if you have check, deposit it into the bank, and it will take some time. Depending on the type of bank, it may take 3 days, 1 week, or maybe more. But if you have cash, immediately you can utilize it. So Kriya Yoga does not say that you practice now, in the next life, or maybe after a few years you will get some benefits. Rather, it promises you practice now and you just get the result just now. You get the benefits. The moment you start, you will get the benefits. He also used to say that opportunity must not be neglected, for it may never return. God has given this beautiful opportunity. First thing, God has given us this human birth, which is very rare. Second thing, He has given this beautiful technique through the lineage of realized masters. It is now with common people. If you ask 40 years back, it was not for common people even. Now it is with us. So a key to liberation is with us. To find our eternal happiness, that source, we have found the way. We are having the masters. What else do we need? Happiness is the creation of our own self. And as long as we are searching this happiness outside, forget about it. There is a Chinese proverb which tells that happiness is lighter than the feather, but no one knows how to support it. And calamity is the heavier than the earth, but no one knows how to avoid it. However, so let us try to transform our lives. Let us try to find that eternal source of happiness which is already within us, and fulfill our goal of life, reducing wants and having only one desire of God realization, to see God everywhere, to be happy and to make others happy. So you will be free from all your negative emotions if you practice Kriya Yoga. I will not take much time. So I am praying to God for your all-round development. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Oh God, let everybody be healthy and happy. Let all become noble and generous. Let there be more peace, harmony. Let there be no suffering, no sorrow. Thank you all. God bless you all. I think I can give you 5 minutes if you have any questions. Yes, please.
How can we find out more about Kriya Yoga when you are not here?
Oh, we have a website, www.kriya.org. So we have lots of information on that website.
Yeah, thank you.
And if I am not here, Lorena is here. She can help you. She is the center leader here. But website will give you lots of information.
Thank you.
And usually our teachers travel every year twice in one center. And throughout the world we have centers. So there is much more support, guided meditation, even after the initiation. I did not tell you one thing, but and that is that to learn Kriya Yoga, there is a process of initiation. It is just like taking admission into the school, and then after initiation, student learns techniques step by step, and one has to attend 3 guided meditations at least with the teacher, so that you are well versed and familiar with the techniques, and you can practice your own, and you can also come for group meditation here or anywhere in the world wherever we have centers. And for learning Kriya Yoga, you don't need to change your food. You don't need to change your faith or your beliefs. Whatever you are, whoever you are, wherever you are, Kriya Yoga accepts you and gives opportunity to develop from there. Thank you. Any more questions, please? Yes?
Can you say a little more about these levels, 1 through 6?
There are 6 levels, as Rishabh was explaining. So, as the student practices, depending on one's own sincerity, one learns more. Isn't it just like when you go to primary school, then you are upgraded like that? There are steps.
Do you need to be initiated into these other levels?
Yes. The more you practice, you learn.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be initiated one after the other. Yes, please.
What's the difference between Kundalini and Kriya?
I know only one thing, that Kriya Yoga is the most ancient science, and all other yogas, they were developed much, much, much later on. Kundalini is nothing. The meaning of Kundalini, you know what is Kundalini in Sanskrit language? The meaning of Kundalini, you are from India?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You have taken sweet jalebi?
Mm-hmm.
So jalebi is a particular sweet which is round, round, round like that inside some syrup. That is called Kundalini.
Chakra.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Sanskrit, Kundalini means jalebi. But meaning of Kundalini is nothing. It is the dormant energy. Some say that it is in the base of the spine. Some say it is in the frontal. But it is dormant energy. It is the same thing. You can call it pranic energy, Kundalini, Alahadini Shakti. You can give any name. Mm-hmm. It is same dormant energy, which by practice of yoga, you awaken that. You follow any kind of yoga, you work on that energy. I can't see any difference. But there was a time when Kriya Yoga was being practiced by everybody. Yes, please.
Is chanting the Gayatri mantra in Sanskrit, is that a good Kriya practice? Is it a Kriya mantra?
No. Kriya is beyond everything. Truly speaking, God is formless, and in Kriya, we experience God in the beginning with divine sound, divine light, divine pulsation, and we go to the formless state of meditation. Chanting, if you want, you can continue that. It has nothing to do with Kriya, or Kriya does not obstruct anything. You can associate it with and do it.
But you said the Vedas were the oldest form of
scriptures, yes.
Kriya, right? And Gayatri is a central mantra. So wouldn't it be a good discipline to chant that every day, you know, for someone who...
Yes, it is good practice. In the beginning, it helps. Then, after chanting, you have to contemplate on its meaning and meditate on this mantra. And that is what is Kriya. When you meditate, you practice Kriya. It is advanced practice, you can say. But it helps. If you are doing it, continue. I am happy with your question.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
If you are practicing that, continue that, chanting the mantra, I am happy with your question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, it's a... I don't know many practices, you know, so...
Okay. Any other question, please?
Jim has a...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jim Baba has some announcement, and then Lauren Ma will give you some more information before concluding the program.
Thank you very much. That was a wonderful talk.